had a shiur which people found to be thought-provoking, and it raised some of the issues about emuna and bitachon and what exactly that means for all of us. Because of the comments and the emails that I've gotten over the past week, I thought it was an opportunity for us to delve a little bit more deeply into what emuna really means. And this is something that we don't often have an opportunity to discuss, and it's worthy of our consideration. It's worthy of our attention. As we'll see, it's an extremely important focus that we need to really give some time to think about. So let's begin with the following. We say in our davening, let's just say what we're not going to discuss today. We will not discuss, because some of the women last night wanted that this should be also part of the discussion. It just gets too complicated when you try to cover everything in one session. We will not talk about the definition of bitachon. What we will talk about today is what exactly it means to have emuna in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what exactly it means to believe in Him. Bitachon is a whole separate discussion and very difficult to actually define what the parameters of bitachon are. But let's stick to the topic that we want to discuss, and that is emuna. We say every Shabbos in our recital of Tehillim, when we say the Psuke de Zimra, the longer Psuke de Zimra for Shabbos, that Mishamayim Hibit Hashem Ra'a Es Kol B'nei HaAdam. What that means is that the Ribono Shel Olam, that God looks down from the heavens and He watches and He observes all that goes on in our world. Ra'a Es Kol B'nei HaAdam. Everything that human beings do in this world. Mimechon Shifto Hashkiach El Kol Yoshvei Haaretz. From God's heavenly abode, from His sanctuary, He looks down at everything that goes on down here. Hayotzer Yachad Libam Hamevin El Kol Maaseim. That God has an understanding into everything that we do, into all that goes on in His beautiful world. And that is one of the most important, one of the most primary precepts of everything that we believe in. That we have an understanding that the Ribono Shel Olam knows everything that goes on in our world, that He runs everything that goes on in our world, and we believe that. And that is what we're going to talk about this morning. That's what we're going to try to get into. In fact, there's an important Gemara, Maseches Makos, Daf Chav Gimel, where the Gemara tells us, Darash Rav Simlai, Sheish Meos Ushlosha Esrei Mitzvos. As we all know, there are 613 mitzvos in the Torah. And the Gemara says it's hard to really keep your mind attentive to all of the 613 mitzvos at all times. And therefore, the Gemara says if you were able to streamline, if you were able to simplify and just categorize what all of the 613 mitzvahs actually were about, how would you do so? It's a strange question. Who said you can? Maybe each one is just a category in and of itself. Who said you're able to streamline it? Well, says the Gemara, we have 613 mitzvahs that were given to Moshe Rabbeinu. Ba David vehamidan ala chasasre. David HaMelech comes along and he says, I am able to narrow it down to 11 main themes. And I'm able to tell you 11 main principles and categories in which everything else will fall into place. But it boils down to 11. And I saved you the details of explaining what exactly those 11 are. It's not relevant to our discussion. Later on in history, Yeshaya HaNavi comes along and he says, you know, I can boil it down even further. And I can break it down to only 6 categories. And under those 6 headings will be the entirety of Torah, all of the 613 mitzvahs. Micha, one of the other Nevi'im, comes along and he says, I can break it down to 3. What are the 3 headings in which all of the Torah fall under? So he says, Higid lecha adam atov v'ma Hashem doresh mimcha. What is it that God expects of all of us? Kiyim, number 1, asos mishpat. You have to live an honest and just lifestyle. Ve'avas chesed. We have to go out of our way to be involved in acts of kindness and charity. And number 3, v'hatznea leches im elokecha. And we should lead a life of tznius, not only in the way that we dress, but in the way that we interact with others, in the way that we speak, in the way that we do everything about the lives that we live, should be b'hatznei aleches im elokecha. And that, says Micha, if you know those 3 principles, number 1, asos mishvat, avas chesed, hatznei aleches im elokecha, that is the entirety of Torah. That's what it's all about. Everything else is just details. And the Gemara finally comes to the conclusion, Ba Chavakuk, the last line of the Gemara. Chavakuk finally came along and he said, He'emidan alachas. I am able to boil all of Torah down to one principle. And you know what that is? What is the primary and central underlying theme of everything that we try to accomplish as Jews? That is, V'tzadik be'emunaso yichye. Says the Gemara, you want to know what everything is about? Chavakuk came along and he taught us that the foundational principle of everything that we do in our experience as Jewish people is Vitzadik be'emunaso yichya. We have an obligation to live life as people who believe. And emuna, obviously, says the Gemara, is something that is so important, that is so primary in the focus of what a Jew needs to think about on a regular day. That's why Habakkuk says, if you were able to boil down the entirety of Torah just to one theme, that's what it would be. And everything else is just details. Everything else is just details. The Rambam writes a striking comment. As we know, the Rambam is one of the most important halachic literatures that we rely ourselves on today for all of the halacha that we follow. And the Rambam writes a comment in the Pirush HaMishnayos, which is his commentary on the Mishnayos. It is not his halachic work. And he says, Yakar be'enai lelamed ikar me'ikari hadas v'ha'emuna. I enjoy more teaching to my students and to those who will read my writings. I enjoy more teaching them about ikari hadas v'ha'emuna, speaking and teaching and inspiring about what emuna actually means. Yoser mikol asher alam dehu. I enjoy and appreciate that more than everything else that I have taught the Jewish community. Striking statement of the Rambam. He feels it's more important, the values that he taught us about what emuna means and what the parameters and definitions are of this concept, than everything else that he's given over. And the Rambam gave us so much. But it's clear that the Rambam believes that this is something that we need to give some attention to. In fact, in the very first siman in Shulchan Aruch, in the very first chapter, in the very first page, the Mishnah Berurah writes that we have what we refer to as Sheish mitzvos chiyuvan tamidi. We have six mitzvos that we have an obligation to think about all the time. Now, what does it mean all the time? I don't have to think about Shabbos all the time. I think about Shabbos when it's Shabbos. I think about Rosh Hashanah when it's Rosh Hashanah. I do mitzvos when the time for the mitzvah comes around. So what does it mean? I have a mitzvos tamidi. I have six mitzvos that I have an obligation to think about all the time. Well, writes the Mishnah Berurah, what it means is Lo yapsiku me'al ha'adam afilu rega echad kol yamav. You never get a break from these mitzvos, even for a moment of one's life. V'kol zman v'chol rega sheyachshov bahem. And he says, every moment of life at any time that I give pause to think about these very critical issues that I need to think about, kiei mitzvah saseh. I have now fulfilled another mitzvah, ve'en keitz lematan schar ha-mitzvos. The reward that we get for being involved and thinking about these six mitzvahs all the time are rewards that are immeasurable, are rewards that are so infinite, they're unlimited when you think about it, because the amount of opportunity that I have to do these mitzvahs is so unlimited and is so infinite when you think about it from that perspective. What are those six mitzvahs that we need to think about all the time? Well, says the Mishnah Berurah, to love HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to believe in Him, to think about Him, those are the mitzvahs that we have to observe at every moment of every day. And I dare say, I don't think the chinuch that we all received, either as children or as adults, I don't think we focus on this too much. I remember a few years ago, we were discussing amongst my close friends, how could it be that we have children who go to all of our local day schools, and they learn and they study Chumash, and they study Mishnayos, and they study Gemara, whatever it might be that they study, all the Mefarshim on the Chumash and the Navi, and they just don't know that God is a part of this equation. It's a very strange thing. But I'm assuming a lot of people know what I'm talking about. You can be the best student in the yeshiva or in the Beis Yaakov or whatever it might be, whatever school you go to, and it's very easy to just not have God in that whole equation. And it's a troubling statement when you think about it, that we can learn and we can study and we can try to be Jews who understand, but God so often is left out from the discussion. It's not by choice. It's just we don't make time to invite Him into the conversation. And I remember Aryeh Leibowitz at the time had made a comment. He said, you know, maybe it would make sense for those of us who have a platform to teach Torah and to teach Torah in hopefully the right way. He said, maybe it's a good idea for us that every time we say some line from the Gemara, we say, you know, the Ribono Shel Olam said in our Gemara that we're studying, God said in His Chumash. Don't forget that when you're going and toiling about what a pasuk in Chumash actually means, don't forget you're trying to understand what it is that God Himself said. He's the reason why we're doing all of this. That's the objective. And unfortunately, we don't think about it enough, but emuna is one of those sheish mitzvos tamidios. It's one of those mitzvos that one has to make time to think about all the time. Because that's really everything that we're trying to accomplish, is this objective of really coming to an understanding of what Emunah is all about and how important it is for all of our lives. We have a pasuk in the Navi Yeshayah, if you look at number Beis. Navi Yeshayah gives a comparison, which seems to be quite off. It seems to be unusual the way he sets it up. And he says the following, Yada Shar Koneu. He's saying a condemnation of the Jewish people, and he says, Yada Shar Koneu, an ox knows instinctively who its owner is, Vechamar Avuz Ba'alav, and a donkey also knows who its owner is. However, he says, when you contrast that to the Jewish people, Yisrael lo yada ami lo hisbonan. And he says, a Jew doesn't know who its owner, who its father is, and they never make time to think about it, says the Navi Yeshayah. And many of the great Bali Musar have explained what it means is, you don't need to train an animal who its owner is. The animal instinctively knows where it's going to get its food from, where it's going to find all of its comfort that it needs in its life. It's instinctive, it's intuitive. The animal doesn't have to be trained. An animal doesn't generally make its own decisions. An animal doesn't have an intellect like a human being. We all know that to be true. But yet an animal instinctively knows who its owner is. And the Ribono Shel Olam says, how can it be that even the animals that I created know who their owner is, and my people never think and never understand who it is that their owner is? And how often in the course of a day do we make pause to think about who our owner is and why it is that we do everything that we do? So we're involved in preparing for Shabbos and doing all the mitzvahs and davening every day and doing all the different things, but how often do we actually make time to think about why am I davening and who am I davening to? Why am I keeping Shabbos? You know, Shabbos is supposed to be the day where we have an opportunity to reconnect and reunite with the Ribono Shel Olam with no distraction. Shabbos is beautiful. But how many of us make time, myself included, on the course of an entire Shabbos, to actually sit down and say, I'm supposed to enjoy the company of the Shechina. I'm supposed to enjoy the presence of mind that I have now because all other distractions are out of my way. How many of us make time over a Shabbos to say, yes, this is my opportunity to once again think about my relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu and understand what that means? Unfortunately, says the Navi, we don't make time for that. Shor yada koneu, the animal knows who its owner is, but unfortunately, the Jews, Yisrael lo yada, the Navi says, ami lo hisponan, we don't make enough time to think about and to consider what it means to have an owner and to have a father who looks after us and who we invest in a relationship with. In Parshas Balak, we're told that Balak has this very, Bilam has this very unusual interaction with the donkey and a malach, and he has this whole conversation, and he says, Vayomer Bilam el malach Hashem, chatasi. Bilam finally confesses, and he says, I've made a mistake, I did the wrong thing. Ki lo yadati, because I did not know that God was in the picture here. Well, the question is, why is he punished if he did not know? You can't punish a child in school if you don't tell him the rules. If you don't make clear what your expectations are, how can you punish a person for not following them? Well then, why is Bilam punished if he says, I've done the wrong thing? What do you mean you did the wrong thing? You didn't know otherwise. Lo yadati, you didn't know that God was involved, so how should you have known to act differently? And the answer that some of Farshim say is, if you don't know that God is a part of the picture, you're the one who's at fault. Nobody needs to teach you that. Nobody needs to teach you that. That should be instinctive. And if a person lives life never understanding that God is the one who is the force and who is the one who is so important and critical to the lives that we live, you cannot claim later on and say, Chatasi ki lo yadati, I'm sorry, I didn't know, God, that you were a part of this. God instinctively put into all of us an understanding that we have a father, that we have a person who we need to answer to, that we have someone who runs our world. And there is no excuse for a person to wake up one day and say, Lo yadati, I'm sorry, I just didn't get the rule book, I didn't know. You can say I didn't know about Shabbos, you can say I didn't know about many other things that many of us might not be aware of, many details of the halacha. Well, maybe we should educate ourselves, but not everybody has the opportunity to do so. That's an excuse. But to give an excuse, Lo yadati, I didn't know that God was in the picture, that says Bilam, and that says the psukim, is just not acceptable. And it's not acceptable because it's understood that a human being should be living life thinking about where it is that we came from and who it is that we answer to. That's what life is all about. So as we said, emuna is an extremely complicated idea. It's not at all a one-dimensional mitzvah. And it's very intricate. It's very complex. So what I'd like to try to do today is just clarify a few of the major themes and points that come up when we talk about emuna. And if we have questions, maybe just hold them till the end so we can try and get a little bit of the details of what it is that we're trying to accomplish today finished before we get interrupted. So let's begin with a question that you'll say is probably a very strange question. And that is there even a mitzvah to believe in God at all? So that's the right response. How can it be? What kind of question is that? Is there a mitzvah to believe in God? Of course there's a mitzvah to believe in God. How can you say otherwise? Well, that's a matter of debate among the Rishonim. Let's try and understand what this is all about. And it's an important discussion. The Rambam begins his Sefer HaMitzvahs when he lists all of the 613 mitzvahs. He writes, mitzvah number one, primary mitzvah, most important, he says, is, let's read it together, number Gimel. Mitzvah Aleph, what is the first mitzvah? Who? Hatzivu yasher tzivanu, this is the instruction that God gave us, b'ha'amanas ha'elokus, that we're supposed to believe that there is a God. Says the Rambam, that's mitzvah number one before you get started. The who, and how do you define what exactly that is supposed to mean for a person in life? That means, he says, shenamin sheyesham ila v'siba, you have to believe that there's something there, and there's a reason why we were created, hu po'al l'chal ha'nimtzayim, and God is the reason why everything in our world actually runs and works. V'hu omro, and says the Rambam, how do I know that this is actually a mitzvah? Because if we've ever studied the Aseres HaDibros, we all know that it says, Anochi Hashem Elokecha. Pretty simple. Says the Rambam, obviously that's what we're getting at. God says you have to believe that I am the one who created the world, and that I'm the one who runs the world. And therefore the Rambam says the very first mitzvah that we were instructed to observe is the mitzvah of believing in God and making sure that we understand that He runs everything in our lives. Not so simple. If you look through some of the other Rishonim, who also made their own count of what they believe are the 613 mitzvahs, and I challenge you, if you go through the entirety of Chumash, it will take you a long time to go through this and actually make a calculation, but it's not so simple to clearly define what the 613 mitzvahs actually are. And this is something that troubled many of the Rishonim, to try and actually clearly define what are in the list and what perhaps are not mitzvahs that make it into the list. Maybe there are subcategories or subcategories. It's not so clear exactly how you define what they are. But this is something that many Rishonim try to make definitions of. So the Rambam says, mitzvah number one, emuna. If you look in some of the other Rishonim, namely the Bahag, the Baal Halachas Gedolos, one of the most important Rishonim, he says, he has a whole count of 613 and he does not list the mitzvah of emuna. How can that be? How can that be? And the Ramban comes along and he says, how did he leave out the most important mitzvah? How do you not discuss the mitzvah of emuna? How do you talk about keeping Shabbos when you don't even know why you're keeping Shabbos? How do you talk about all the different mitzvahs that we do when we don't even know who it is that we're doing them for? Says the Ramban, it cannot be that the Bahag just missed a detail here. It must be that there's a reason why he left it out. And we'll read the Ramban together, number dollar, because it's so important the way he formulates his idea of why the Baal Halachas Gedolos left out the most critical and primary mitzvah, which is the mitzvah of believing in God Himself. Says the Ramban, Hanir midaito shabala halachas. It seems to me, the way that I interpret the reason why the Baal Halachas left out the mitzvah of emunah is because Shein minyan hatarjag elakzeirosav yisale shegazer aleinu lasos omenano shalo nase. The only ones that are included in this list of 613 are when the Ribbono shel Olam gave us instructions of what to do and what not to do. So shaking lulav is in there, and blowing shofar is in there, and keeping Shabbos is in there, and speaking lashon hara is in there, and all the mitzvos and averos are listed in the number 613. However, he says, Aval ha'emuna b'mitziyaso yisale. When you have this concept of emuna, of belief in God, it is so axiomatic, it is so elementary to every Jew to believe in that, you cannot consider that one of the 613 mitzvahs. That's not just another detail. That's not like keeping Shabbos. That's not like blowing shofar. That's the bedrock. That's the foundation of everything else. And therefore, he says, there's no reason to count that. Because if you don't believe in God, if you don't understand what emunah means, then everything else is just pointless. There's no reason to even list anything else. And therefore, says the Baha'i, I'm going to leave it out because it's so axiomatic that every Jew needs to believe in this and every Jew needs to understand it. There's nothing to even discuss. Therefore, he leaves it out, which gives us a little bit of a picture of how central and how fundamental this idea of emunah really needs to be. So much so that the Baha'i felt not even worth discussing because there's nothing to discuss. Not even worth listing because there's nothing to list. If you don't believe in that, then you don't believe in anything. If you don't have an understanding of what it is, then forget all the rest of the Torah and mitzvahs. That, says the Baha'i, is the reason why this very critical and important mitzvah was left out of the count. So, let's assume, like the Rambam for a minute, that there actually is a mitzvah of emunah. There's a mitzvah to believe. And I'm sorry that we're reading so much inside, but I think it's important that we actually, when you deal with a subject that is as critical as this one, you see for yourselves. Don't think I'm making anything up. I'm not selling you a bill of goods. You see for yourself what the Rishonim themselves have to say about it. So, let's assume that there actually is a mitzvah to believe in the Ribono Shel Olam. Either it's a mitzvah that we count, or it's just so foundational that we all need to make sure that we have that down before we begin. So somebody raised a question last week, which was actually a very intelligent question. And one of the people at our shir said, what happened to emunah pshuta? You know, last week we spoke about sometimes God is distant and sometimes we don't understand. And this person asked, what happened to emunah pshuta? Emunah pshuta means the old bubby that lived in Europe somewhere, all she knew was her tehillim and that God looks after her and life is great and life is wonderful. That's emunah pshuta. And nothing's ever wrong. It's a good question. My response to that is twofold. Number one, maybe when you lived Chaim Pshutim, you were able to live a life of emunah pshuta being your answer. Maybe. When everything about every moment of our life today is so complicated, it's not going to work for our children to say you should believe emunah pshuta. It just doesn't work. Maybe it works for some people. But for many of us, it does not work. We live in a society where people are educated, where people are intellectuals, where they can find answers to many questions that they have in so many different areas and disciplines in life. And emunah pshuta is just not going to cut it for them. So you're right. Maybe emunah pshuta worked for people who were on a very lofty madrega, for people who had a deep understanding and connection on their own. Maybe emunah pshuta was the answer. I don't know that emunah pshuta is going to cut it for most people today. And besides for that, aside from that, leave that out of the picture for a minute. Let's say all of our lives were very simple, and life was very straightforward, and we didn't have the confusing questions that many people have today. There is a discussion in the Rishonim. What is the ideal, what is the optimal, what is the model believer in God? Who is the person that we look to and say, this is the real right way to believe in Him, this is the way it should be done? And the Rishonim have a discussion. Is our emunah in the Ribono Shel Olam supposed to be ideally just an emunah pshuta, a very primitive and basic understanding that there's a God in the world? My father, my mother told me that there's a God, so I believe. Do I understand what it means? No. But that's where my emunah starts and ends, and that's all it's supposed to be. Or does emunah actually mean that we have an obligation to delve into the confusing and complicated reality of what that actually means to us? What is the ideal believer in God? Is the ideal believer the one who just lives life with an emunah pshuta, having no questions and needing no answers? Or is the ideal believer the person who tries to understand as best as they possibly can? Let's see what the Rishonim say. We begin with the Chovos HaLevavos. Chovos HaLevavos was written almost 1,000 years ago by Rabbeinu Bechaya Ibn Pekuda, one of the great Rishonim, one of the greatest Jewish philosophers, the Chovos HaLevavos. And he has an opinion on this issue. And he writes, Kol mi sheyesh bekoach sichlo v'hakaroso. Anyone who has the intellectual capacity, the intellectual maturity, to lamod al birur mashakibel, to fully comprehend and to fully grasp and understand what it is that my parents have taught me. So my parents told me, you should believe there's a God. Very nice. Now I'm a mature adult, and the question is, do I have any further obligation? My parents taught me that, and because of that, I keep Shabbos every week, and because of that, I do lots of things. Says the Chovos HaLevavos in the introduction to his Sefer, anybody who has the mental capacity and the ability to further delve into the subject and to better understand what it is that their parents taught them, and just, my life is too busy for me to make time for this, writes the Chovos HaLevavos, Asili Enesh Al Kach. A person will be held responsible for not making time to better understand what it means to have a relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam. Meaning, I can live an entire life doing nothing wrong, doing everything right, but I've never made time in my life to better understand what it means to have God in my life. So I keep every Shabbos and I do all the mitzvahs I'm asked to do. I daven every single day and everything's going right. But I never bother to sit down and make pause and make space to invite the Ribbono Shel Olam into the conversation of my life. Says the Chovos HaLevavos, that's unacceptable. That's not a person who believes. What kind of belief is that? Imagine you have a marriage where the spouse never bothers to have a better, a deeper understanding of what the other spouse is all about. What kind of marriage is that? Is that a relationship? So if you live in those communities where the marriages are in some way prearranged, your parents told you it's a nice girl, it's a nice boy, they got married, they didn't know any better or any worse. Imagine if the marriage just starts and ends there. And the couple never bothers to talk to each other and to figure out, well, what are you all about? And how to appreciate the other one a little bit on a more deep level. Is that a real relationship, says the Chovos HaLevavos? Do you have an excuse to say, well, I'm too busy. Life is just too busy and too complicated. I don't have time to sit down with my spouse and actually have a conversation. I don't have time to really begin to appreciate what they're all about. My parents told me you're a nice person. Okay, I'll live out my life that way. It's okay. That's not real, says the Chovos HaLevavos. That's not the ideal. That's not what we're looking for. And therefore, he says, it is the responsibility of a human being who has the intellectual capacity and the intellectual ability to try as best as they can to come to a deeper appreciation and a deeper understanding of what the Ribbono Shel Olam means to you in your life. Now, for every person, it's going to mean something else. And for some people, it's going to mean one thing, and for others, it's going to mean something else. Let's see what the Chovos HaLevavos writes three chapters later in the Sefer. And he says, Ach ledas, he says, I'd like to weigh in on this issue. Imanu chayavim lachgar al hayichud b'derech ha'iyunim lo. Do we have an obligation to try and better and more deeply understand what it is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is supposed to be in our world? Omer, he says, I will share my opinion, and that is, Ki kol ma sheyuchal lachgar al inin hazeh, however much a person can try and get involved in this idea, v'hadoma lo min ha'imyanim, chayiv lachgar alav kifi hasagaso v'koach hacharoso. We have an obligation to do as best as we can to understand God's place in our world. That's the obligation that we have. That's what it means to be a believer. That's what it means to be a person who has emunah. And he says, I'll prove it to you. The pasuk says, we recite it every day in Aleinu. V'yadata hayom v'hashevosa el levavecha. Ki Hashem hu elokim b'shamayim imal v'yal ha'aretz mitachas. What does that mean, says the Chovos HaLevavos? V'yadata hayom means you have to actually understand it. You need to internalize it. V'hashevosa el levavecha, you need to feel it. Ki Hashem hu elokim, that God is the one who runs the world and God is involved in every moment and aspect of your life. It's not enough just to say, my parents told me, or I went to this school and that's what they trained me to believe. V'yadata hayom means you have to make time and space in your mind and in your heart to actually have a deep understanding of what that means to you. And therefore he says, that is the obligation that we all have as practicing Jews. David HaMelech leaves instructions for his son Shlomo. As David HaMelech is passing away, he says to his son, Ve'ata, Shlomo b'ni, da es Elokei avicha. I know you grew up in a religious home. And I know you watched me, your father, teach you everything that you need to know. But that's not enough. Now you have a secondary obligation, and that is, with all the mitzvahs that you observe, and all the Shabbosos that you keep, and all the kingdom that you're going to rule, Da es Elokei Avicha, now you have an obligation to build your own relationship with Him, to understand what He means for you, to internalize the messages of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence in your life is supposed to really be. Va'avdeyu b'leiv shalem u'v'nefesh chafetza. And to serve Him with all of your heart. What we say in Kriya Shema every day, b'chal nafshecha v'chal me'odecha. It's not just words, it means the Ribbono Shel Olam needs to be in our hearts. We need to think and feel about Him. We need to make that relationship something that is real for all of us to understand. That's the approach of the Chavos HaLevavos. The ideal Jew, he says, in his opinion, is the one who gets into the philosophical understandings of everything that God can mean to you in your life. That's what it means to be the ideal believer. Comes along the Sefer HaChinuch, about 250 years later. Sefer HaChinuch was written in the 1300s, in the days of the Ramban and the Rashba. Not clear exactly who authored the Sefer, but it's a credible source. Something that we've had in our tradition for hundreds of years. And the Sefer HaChinuch in his introduction writes that he has a very strong opposition to this approach. And he doesn't understand, why would a person do that? Why would he get involved in these discussions? Why would he get involved in these kinds of questions? Why are you going there? And he says, Chalila lanu lavo achar hamelech bigaveinu. With our arrogance, we're going to come and start asking questions. What does God mean? And why does He do this? And how could it be? And what's His place? What do you think you're going to accomplish? Says the Sefer HaChinuch. In fact, we mentioned last week, the Sefer HaIkarim, another very important Sefer on Jewish philosophy, writes, Ilu yedativ hayisiv. If I understood everything about the decision-making process that God goes through before He does anything, I would be God myself. But guess what? God created us as human beings, and He did not give us the capacity to fully understand. Otherwise, you would be able to run the world on your own. You wouldn't need God to be involved. Therefore, says the Sefer HaChinuch, why would we raise questions that we don't know the answers to? Why would we ever, says the Sefer HaChinuch, get involved with our arrogance to try and philosophize and understand what God's role is in the world when there's no way that you'll ever come to an understanding? And says the Sefer HaChinuch, I believe, Avoseinu Sidru Shulchan Lefaneinu, our ancestors have worked out whatever they worked out many centuries ago. And he says, let's just live based off of that. Ma lanu lachkor lachatet achar divrei. And what are we going and digging in once again? What do we think? We're smarter than they are? We think we're greater philosophers than they were? Just leave it be. Let it be. If they figured out whatever their understandings were and they gave us over the main principles of what Emunah should mean for all of us, leave it at that. And the ideal Jew, says the Sefer HaChinuch, is the one who's able to live life with Emunah Pshuta. Basic, very primitive relationship, no reason for it to be any deeper than just, my parents told me, and that's what I believe. This is what my grandparents did, this is what our ancestors believed in, and that's why I believe. No reason to go deeper than that. Says the Sefer HaChinuch, that's the way it's supposed to be done. I think it's a very important discussion. I think it's a very important disagreement. And I think both of them, who am I to say, both of them have validity. Both of them are the Rishonim. Of course they have validity. But both of them speak to different generations. There are different times in which maybe the Emunah Pshuta model works. And there are times when we're expected to do more than that. There are times when we're expected to understand on a deeper level. And that is the basic disagreement between the Chavos HaLevavos on the one hand and the Sefer HaChinuch on the other, who try and give, in their opinion, what they believe is the ideal ma'amin ba'akadosh baruch hu, the ideal believer, and what that's supposed to mean. Now, whatever your opinion is about that, it's quite clear that at some point, as much as you might look into all the theological questions that face human beings, and as much as you might try and understand, you're going to come to a roadblock at some point. As we said, ilu yedativ hayisiv. If I understood everything about God, I would be Him. But that will never happen. So at some point in our research, at some point in our understanding, in our intellect, we're going to hit a place where we're going to say, well, this is just beyond. This is just beyond me. So somebody told me a story last week after the shiur. I said it over on Shabbos morning, and I think It was such hashgacha pratis. Little did I know that it was the shloshim of this individual on this past Shabbos when I said over the story in his memory. And it's an amazing story. The story is, she told me last week that her grandfather was a Holocaust survivor. And, I don't know, did I say this last week in this year? Sorry, okay. I'll repeat it for those of us who may have forgotten. So, her grandfather was a Holocaust survivor. And she said that very, very often, he used to tell his children and his grandchildren and the rest of the family members, he can't wait to die. You know why? He lived a ripe old age. He had a great life after the Holocaust. He said he can't wait to die because he has the opportunity then to bring the Ribono Shel Olam to a Din Torah. And he's going to finally ask him all of these penetrating questions, these difficult problems that he has theologically about, where were you, God, during the Holocaust? So she tells me the story about her grandfather. And this is what he always spoke about. And I said, how amazing is it? A person can live life, an entire life, with such questions like that. After everything that he experienced, he can have so many problems with his emunah, and he has every right to have a problem with it. From our perspective, how is one ever supposed to justify or understand? We cannot understand it. And he said, he can't wait to have that difficult discussion with the Ribono Shel Olam. He's going to take him to a Din Torah. And yet, with all those feelings, he kept every Shabbos since the Holocaust. He put on tefillin every day and he davened every day. Is that not the beauty of what it means to be a believer in God? I have my problems, I have my questions, I hit a roadblock, I have an issue in life. I don't understand it. And we all have things in life that we don't understand and that we will never understand. That's okay. It's impossible to fully understand because, unless you're God, you will never understand fully the way that God runs His world. How is it possible to ever have an expectation of understanding? But he said that didn't stop him from keeping Shabbos and from doing everything else that he was supposed to do. I still love God and I still believe in Him. Doesn't mean I don't have questions. That doesn't take away from a person's emunah. It shows that you really have a relationship. It shows there's something real there. It shows that although you have some issues and you have some problems, you're still willing to say, I'll do what it takes to make this happen. I'll do what it takes to continue to believe and to continue to hold on and to do what you've asked me to do. And this is really something that Reb Chaim Soloveitchik writes. He says, as much as we have maybe an obligation of yadata hayom, of trying to delve into the understandings of what it means to believe in God in this world and in our lives, we all at some point need to jump over from yidiya to emuna. At some point you're going to have to take the leap of faith and say, you know, I just believe because I believe. I've tried to understand it as much as I can. But at some point, every human being is going to have to hit that place where they say, I cannot understand anymore. This is not an issue of yidiya any longer. This is not an issue of answering questions. There are some questions that you just will not be able to answer. And that's acceptable. But he says at every point in a person's life, they're going to have to make that leap of faith, literally, to go over from the side of yidiya, of clear understanding, to being a person who's just a believer. To a person who's just a mammon. So emuna pshuta at some point needs to kick in. Emuna pshuta needs to kick in at some point because we will never have a complete understanding of everything that we try to gain an understanding of. Let's continue. In the Chovos HaLevavos he writes as follows. Look at number Vav. Hope I'm not boring anybody. I think it's an important discussion. Chachmas haTorah mischalekes lebeis chalakim. He says, if you break down the Torah, you'll see that it can break itself down into two components, two segments. Ha'echad mehem ladas chovas ha'evarim. One is we have an obligation to know what we as functioning physical human beings need to do. The chovas ha'evarim. What do my hands need to do? What do my feet need to do? What do my ears need to hear? What do my eyes need to see? What do I need to speak with my mouth? That's chovas ha'evarim. V'hi ha-chachma ha-niris. He says, that aspect, that dimension of Torah is something that is obvious, it's visible, it's discernible to anyone who sees. You're shaking a lulav, you're blowing the shofar, you're saying a bracha. That's chovas ha-evarim. However, he says, ha-sheni, there's a second component, and that is, ledas chovas ha-levavos. We have an obligation to know what the duty of the heart is. What is the duty of the mind, of my intellect? Vehem hamatzpunim, he says, that is much more concealed, that is hidden. Vehi achachma hatzfuna. That's what emuna is. Emuna is part of the chavas halavavos. It's not blowing shofar, and it's not shaking lulav. It's far more difficult than that. It's actually getting in check with your heart and with your mind and understanding. Do I have this concealed relationship that nobody else knows about, that nobody else can understand, that nobody else can appreciate? It's much more difficult to develop that. Skip down to where he says on the next side. We're running out of time. Min ha-seichel she'amarti. Ki kvar nisbar lanu, he says, I've already argued the point. Ki ha-adam mechubra minefesh v'guf. That a human being is created from two components as well. We have our physical body, and we all believe that we also have a soul, that we have an neshama. Ushneya mitovos habori aleinu. How lucky we are that the Ribono Shel Olam has given us both of these. Ha'echad nira v'hasheni eino nira. One of them is visible to the human, to the naked eye, and one of them will never be able to be seen. Anachnu chayavim la'avodo sova avur zeh. In response to the gift of God giving us both a physical body, a guf, and a neshama, we have to respond to Him by serving Him with, number one, an avoda galuya, and number two, he says, with an avoda hatzfuna. We have an obligation to serve the Ribono Shel Olam, number one, in an outward, in an open way, where everybody will see. And we have a secondary obligation, which is to do and to work on the avoda hatzfuna, which is the private and intimate relationship that we need to have with God Himself. That's what the neshama has an obligation to do throughout life. Our bodies have many other obligations. Our neshama has an obligation to respond to the gift of its life by giving back to the Ribono Shel Olam and saying, what I'm going to try and do throughout life is to develop my relationship with you and to understand what meaning and value that relationship has for me in my own life. And he goes on and on, you can read it on your own, where he develops this theme and he says that these are the two components that every Jew needs to think about throughout life. The two elements of life really are meant to be the chavas ha'evarim on the one hand, but also to think about the chavas ha'levavos once in a while. What is the duty of the heart of a Jew? What is the duty of the mind of a Jew? What are we supposed to do in our service to the Ribono Shel Olam with those aspects of our lives? How are we supposed to connect with Him, not only with the lulav that we shake and with the shofar that we hear and that the Hanukkah candles that we're going to light and the Shabbos that we're going to keep, but how do we connect to Him on that deeper level of the avoda hatzfuna, of the hidden service that we're supposed to have that nobody else will see, that nobody else will recognize and no one else will appreciate at all? It's just you and the Ribono Shel Olam alone. It's an important concept to think about. The Ramchal, one of the greatest Jewish philosophers of all times, lived in the 1700s. He was one of the Italian philosophers. In his time, there were many who were writing Svarim on philosophy, or Moshe Chaim Luzzatto. He wrote the Mesilas Yesharim, which is probably one of the most important works that we have in Jewish philosophy. And he writes there, you know, we all have our understanding of why we think Gullus is so horrific, of why we think Gullus is so horrible. And this is really how we got into the discussion in the first place. So much tragedy, there's so much negativity, there's so much going on that we just don't want to be a part of. Says the Ramchal, if I can boil down all of Jewish experience in Gullus and understand what's the crux of the issue, what's the worst part of it all? Why is Gullus so painful for a Jew? What is it that's lacking? What is it that we need back in our lives that would solve the Gullus problem? Says the Ramchal, Vayhi kasher hisu osi Elokim mibeis kadsho v'sefarto. Number Zion. And it was when God got rid of His Beis HaMikdash, when He no longer had that sanctuary, that beautiful place where He used to reside, After that, he says, "B'machshakim hoshivani." After that, the Ribbono Shel Olam left his world in a state of disorientation, in a state of absolute confusion. B'machshakim hoshivani means we're living in a dark cloud, in a blurry world. That's what's missing. Hischila hachachma lehistalek miYisrael. And writes the Ramchal, you want to know what everything about Galus boils down to? It's very simple. Hine kula mishtakim v'holchim v'choshech hagadol hazeh b'chol hadoros. Everything that Galus is a lack of clarity, a lack of vision, a lack of understanding of what the Ribbono Shel Olam is supposed to be. I think about this all the time. I go to weddings quite often in this community, or all kinds of simchas, and they're all wonderful, and they're so beautiful. Shouldn't start with that. I observe Shabbos every week. And Shabbos is so nice. And we have Yomim Tovim throughout the year. If anyone has ever spent a Shabbos in Yerushalayim, you'll know that Shabbos here is just not Shabbos. Let's be honest. It's nothing to do with our community. Shabbos here is just not Shabbos, and you can do everything right. Shabbos here is not felt the way it should be felt. Anybody know what I'm talking about? You go to Yerushalayim, and Shabbos is lived the way it's supposed to be experienced. And you go to Yerushalayim, and Sukkot is what Sukkot is supposed to be before all the Americans came in. And Yom Tov, and every experience that you have there is real, and you're really living it. I have one sibling in our family who got married in Eretz Yisrael. Only one of the nine of us. She married an Israeli. And was her wedding probably a simpler menu than any of ours? I guarantee it was. And were there actually chairs set up when we got to the wedding? No. And it was what it was. And it's an Israeli wedding. But it's the greatest feeling that I ever have had at a simcha. Never felt it at anyone else's. There's something real to the experience that we have in Eretz Yisrael. And there's such an illusion. B'machshakim hoshivani. We go to weddings here and simchas are so beautiful, but they're so fake. There's nothing there. I don't mean this as an offense to anybody, but let's be real. I went last week to a wedding, and it was amazingly beautiful. And there were a group of us who... I'm always curious. You know, it's in style now in some places that you take a shell of a building and you recreate it for a wedding. And I was amazed. I went to this wedding. It was magnificent. It was beautiful. And I always go behind the curtains. I always want to see what was the shell before they made this. It was the most disgusting place I've ever seen. It was disgusting. So we put up this huge illusion for all of us to appreciate and all of us to enjoy, and it's great, it's beautiful. But that's all it is. It's one big cloud, and we're all living in this cloud. B'machshakim hoshivani, we have no understanding of what it means to have meaning in life. We have no understanding of what it means to have the Ribbono Shel Olam as the focal presence of our lives. That's what's missing. You want to know why every Shabbos here is not what Shabbos is supposed to be? It's because the Ribbono Shel Olam is not a part of the equation of Shabbos here because he's just not here. Of course he's here. But the presence is not as potent as it is when we're in Galus, as the experience that we're supposed to have in Eretz Yisrael. The thought of Aliyah troubles me every moment of every day. Every single day, I'm sorry. But it does. It's troubling. How am I raising my children here? For what? Why am I doing this to them? Am I giving them the greatest experience that they can have as Jews, living here in Chutz Laretz? Maybe some aspects of it are great. Maybe some of it is wonderful. But the bottom line is, they've never experienced the Shabbos the way Shabbos is supposed to be. They've never experienced the Ribbono Shel Olam as a real entity in their lives. And you go to Eretz Yisrael and a 10-year-old child has a better understanding of God than I do. How can it be? How is that possible? Because, writes the Ramchal, if you were able to boil down the challenge of Galus to one problem, what it all comes down to is B'machshakim Hoshivani. You can read the rest of the Ramchal on your own, but he basically makes it quite clear. The last line of this paragraph, he says, Avot tsara gedola hi la'amenu, shelo yiluchu la'or ba'or ha'chayim. The problem with our people in Galus is, yes, this tragedy, and yes, this suffering, and that's painful, and it's all horrible. But the main issue that we suffer is that we're not able to see the light of the Ribono Shel Olam in our lives, that we're not able to appreciate, where is He? What is He all about? Where does He fit in to the context of my life? That's what we're here for. That's what's lacking. All of Galus boils down to that, and nothing more. Do you think that when there was a Beis HaMikdash, people have this mistaken impression. Do you think when there was a Beis HaMikdash, nobody ever got sick? Nobody ever died? There was life. There were hospitals, people got sick, there were doctors, people died then too. There were challenges. Eretz Yisrael and Geula will not take away the problems of human life. That's not a Galus problem. Writes the Ramchal, that's not the issue. There was suffering in the times when we lived in Eretz Yisrael also. Sometimes very horrible suffering. Says the Ramchal, the Galus problem is primarily the fact that we have no clarity of vision. The fact that we're living in this big cloud of confusion. That the Ribono Shel Olam is just not here. That we don't see His light, that we don't feel His presence. That's what Galus is. Let's close with one final thought, and that is, the Navi in the Sefer Yeshaya writes, when he prophesizes about the Geula, about what that's going to look like, about what that experience will be for us, he says in number Ches, Sos asiz b'Hashem, I will rejoice in the Ribono Shel Olam, Tagel nafshi b'Elokai. My heart will be so excited, so overwhelmed by the fact that once again I'm reunited with God. Ki hil bishani big de yesha, because God has once again put the beautiful clothing on me. Kechosan yechayim pe'er uchachala tadat paneha, says the Navi. We're going to feel once again like a chasan and kala reunited, so excited. They didn't know if they were actually going to meet each other, whether they would get married. And here we go again. We're going to get married to the Ribono Shel Olam once again. Writes the Dibne Magid, such a beautiful mashal to explain what this means. What is geula that we all daven for? Why is it that we want a geula? You think all your suffering is going to end? Many Rishonim say, Olam kimin hago noeg. We have this notion that when the geula comes, there's going to be money falling from trees, and no one's ever going to be sick again. I don't know if it's going to be or it won't be. Maybe it will, maybe it won't. I don't know. The Rambam says, everything's going to be as usual. We're just going to all be in Eretz Yisrael. We're going to have a geula. But life is going to keep going. I know it doesn't sound good to say that. That's what he says. Writes the Dibne Magid, this pasuk in the Navi explains to us why it is that we daven for a geula. What is the objective? What is the purpose? And he says the following parable, the following mashal, as he often did. You have somebody, a young child, who goes to a wedding for the first time. Never been to a wedding, has no idea what a wedding is. And he comes in, sees in front of him two people standing under the chuppah. He assumes they must be the most important people here in the room. So he goes straight up to the chuppah, and he sees a boy and a girl, and he walks up to the young man and he says to him, you know, you seem to be a very important part of everything that's going on here. He says, yes, I am. Well, maybe you can explain to me. You look very happy. I've never been to a wedding before. I don't really know what it is. Can you explain to me, why are you so happy? What are you so excited about? Chassan turns to him and he says, what kind of question is that? Why am I happy? It's my wedding. He says, yeah, but I don't really know what a wedding is. Can you explain to me why it is that a wedding is a reason for you to be happy? He says, well, don't you see the tuxedo that I have? I've never worn anything this expensive in my life. And it's so beautiful. I got a new pair of shoes and I'm wearing this watch and everything. It's amazing. Isn't that a reason to be excited? Okay. So he turns to the kala and he says, you know, you also seem to be a very important part of everything we're doing here. Why do you look so excited? What are you so happy about? She says, why am I happy? It's my wedding. Of course I'm happy. Well, what does a wedding mean? Why is a wedding a reason to be happy? So the kala says, I'll explain to you. I've never worn a gown that looks this beautiful in my life. And I've never had jewelry that was this expensive put on me. And I'm so overwhelmed by all the clothing I'm wearing. It's just so beautiful. It's an amazing feeling. I'm really excited about it. Writes the Dubna Magid, Achen Vei, to such a wedding, to such a marriage. Can you believe it? If under the chuppah, all the chassan can think about and all the kala can think about is the beautiful clothing that they're wearing. Yes, it might be true that every wedding needs to have a white gown and nice jewelry and his tuxedo, and it's all great. But that's not the focus. You're missing what it's all about. If you walk away from a wedding and you think that was the reason to celebrate, you've missed everything that a marriage and a wedding is supposed to be all about, says the Dubna Magid. The Navi here frames for us, why is it that we all look forward and we yearn for a geula? Why is it so important? What do you look forward to? You look forward to geula because you think money's going to fall from trees? Maybe it will. You look forward to geula because maybe nobody's going to be sick anymore? Maybe it will. Maybe it won't. Who knows? Maybe you'll have all these added benefits of living in Eretz Yisrael. But that's not what it's about. That's not why we want a geula. Says the Navi, the reason why we daven for a geula is one purpose only. Sos asiz b'Hashem. Because now I finally have the opportunity to reconnect with the Ribono Shel Olam, who I've been lost from for so many years. I have not understood him in all my life. I've lived in Galus. He was not a part of my life. I had no way of reaching him. I had no way of connecting with him on a real deep level. Sos asiz b'Hashem. And now the Ribono Shel Olam gives me the opportunity once again to celebrate and rejoice in my relationship with him. Tagel nafshi b'elokai. I now have the opportunity to be overjoyed in the fact that I'm reunited with my beloved. And I finally am out of this thick, dark cloud that Galus has put us all into. Writes the Dubna Magid, that's why we need a geula. Because we live in this cloud, and it's Anochi Haster Aster Panai Mayhem. The Ribono Shel Olam is so hidden, we don't even realize how far we are from Him. That's how hidden He is. We don't even realize how everything that we do as Jews is so distant from our relationship with Him. A Shabbos is not a Shabbos, and a Yantiv is not a Yantiv, and everything we do is not what it should be, as beautiful as all those experiences are. That's why we need a geula. And that, says the Navi, is kechasen and a kala. The geula will be like that chasen and kala, who, if they dare on their wedding day, focus only on the clothing, focus only on the externals, and don't realize what the primary reason why they're here, why they were brought to this place, why they're together, why everyone's celebrating, that's a marriage that will never last. That's a marriage that has no meaning at all. And that is what we daven for every single day. That's why we need a geula, because we live a life in galus of b'machshakim hoshivani Hashem. God has left us in a dark cloud where we have no understanding at all of what He's supposed to mean to us. Do we try our best? Writes the Chovos HaLevavos, yes. A person who has the intellectual and emotional capacity to do that should try to understand a little bit more deeply what the Ribono Shel Olam's presence means to you in your life. But we will never get to a deeper understanding while we're here in Galus. Galus is just too cloudy. Galus is too dark. And that is why we yearn for a geula. That is the response when we all in America still reel from a tragedy in Pittsburgh. And we think about what is the crux of the issue. Yes, did people die? It's awful. It's horrible. A tragedy, a massacre. There's nothing that can be worse than that. But at the root of all of it is that we just don't understand where the Ribono Shel Olam fits into this. How can He make that happen? How could the Ribono Shel Olam allow for such a thing to happen? How could all the tragedy in our world be sanctioned by the Ribono Shel Olam Himself? That's what's lacking, that's what's missing, and opportunities like these, as painful as they are, give us the experience of once again reevaluating and reconsidering just a little bit what Emunah actually means to all of us, and how important and essential it is for us to develop an appreciation for this most primary mitzvah, which is really the bedrock of everything that we believe in, of all that we practice. Amir Tz Hashem.